Intentional grounding.
Goaltenders caviar.
Batter's box.
Butterfly slam.
False start.
Shoestring timeout.
Punt.
Punt.
Punt. Watching sports is pretty great.
Okay. Let's, in the interest of time, let's agree that that's true.
But it can be challenging when you're at a place when maybe you should not be watching sports, but you'd like to watch sports anyway.
You're talking about work.
Yes, I would be.
Or maybe a funeral, but probably work.
Yes. And so as we get closer to the NCAA tournament, which I would say is probably one of the two most popular occasions to watch sports at work, I would say the other being the World Cup. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, the World Cup, maybe the Olympics, or the Summer Olympics are up there as well.
That's true. So I was discovering today, while totally not attempting to watch basketball at work, that sometimes you get that irritating lag time between what you're watching and Twitter, and Twitter does that thing where a bunch of people all say, "Oh, man," or "Oh," and then you wait 30 seconds, and then you see what it is, and you're like, "Oh, this is what, like, the Telegraph must have been like."
Yeah, you can't. So here's what you do. If you're gonna watch it over, if you're gonna watch a sporting event over a streaming feed of some sort, whether it's on your phone or through a Chromecast or whatever you're doing, you just can't have Twitter going. You can't have your Twitter feed going. Whether that means you have to, you know, scroll over in TweetDeck, or just leave it on your notifications page or whatever. You just have to cut yourself off from that source, because it doesn't add anything for you.
No. Like, no. Actually, if you... I thought this is interesting. If you just look at Twitter in a vacuum during any sporting event, you will learn nothing.
No. And that's why it's hilarious when people try to live tweet a sporting event, because it's already just think about, like, reading a play-by-play recap of a sporting event. That even that only tells you so much. And Twitter is, you know, maybe 1/80th of that.
Right.
So just don't keep, you have to choose slightly delayed, but still live sports, or Twitter. Choose the slightly delayed live sports.
Yeah.
Or go get a TV, steal cable from you, someone near your office, and eliminate this problem altogether.
That's an excellent point.
I'm just trying to make your life better, Jane.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would really, I'm sure that would be great for my office.
We are going to have a very, very accomplished guest on tonight's episode. Reporter from USA Today, Nicole Auerbach, a fellow Michigan alum with you.
Yes.
Because God forbid we don't talk about Michigan at any point.
I don't know what would happen if we didn't talk about Michigan. What do people who don't talk about Michigan do all day?
Oh my God, we have healthy relationships with the people we love.
I could do that.
Can you?
I could try really hard.
No. Is there any sporting topic we could touch upon where there would be no obviously shoehorned way that Michigan would come up in the conversation?
So this is actually a funny note you add here. So my fiance is from New Zealand.
Right.
New Zealand is currently the host of the Cricket World Cup.
Right.
Which is a sporting event to which I know nothing about and can make no Michigan connections whatsoever.
I bet if you tried, if you did it with a day of research, I bet you could find it.
I'm sure I could, but just thinking about it, for one, cricket makes no sense. For another, there's really, like, I can't really get in a Harbaugh reference into this, so it's just not for me, I guess.
He'd look ridiculous in the cricket outfit.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know he'd be really intense about it, too.
He's really
intense. All just sticky wickets and such.
He's really intense about everything. That doesn't
it's true.
That doesn't mean shit. Joining us tonight on Punt Brothers, reporter for USA Today in both college football and college basketball, and I believe coming to us from Nashville, Tennessee right now, Nicole Auerbach. Nicole, how are you tonight?
I'm good. And yes, I am in Nashville. First time ever. I got like 100 restaurant recommendations yesterday. So I plan on gaining at least 10 pounds while I'm here for about 5 days. So really excited.
2 pounds a day is, I think, the right rate. That, at mm-hmm. least based on what I know of people in Tennessee, that seems right.
Yeah, that seems accurate. That's the weight gaining schedule.
Yeah, it's sort of like converting from one measure to another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you weigh so much in Tennessee that you weigh a different amount in somewhere. It's like British stone. I don't really know how the stone system works, but they have
yep.
it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sure.
So Nicole, you just published not too long ago a very interesting piece on John Calipari from the perspective of not precisely his time as a coach now, but his time as a college player. Certainly want to encourage everybody to read that. And I want to focus very briefly on the part that stood out to me the most, and that is John Calipari, college trailer park landlord. And I wonder if you could tell us how you even stumbled into this particular factoid.
Yes. So John Calipari at Clarion University, now it's Clarion State then, D2 place, the way he tells it, he was living in a dorm room in a building that should have probably been shut down by the time he lived there. And there was like asbestos on the pipe that he slept next to. And he was like, I got to get out of here. I got to live somewhere else. So he somehow, him and his roommate then start living in a trailer that was near the basketball gym. And then, you know, John was just complaining, was like, wow, paying so much in rent to live in like a mobile home. I mean, there's got to be a better way. And he found a woman in Frogtown, Pennsylvania, which is one of the best details of the entire story. And she sold him 2 trailers. And he thinks they were about, you know, $2,500 a piece. He borrowed money from his dad. So he bought 2. He and his roommate lived in one of them. And then he rented out the other one and made a nice little profit off of that. He was able to pay his dad back within a year. And yeah, he was doing this on the side as he was a college basketball player. He was making some money in college.
Imagine if you could have rented a trailer from a college athlete when you were a student, Jane. You would have done that in a heartbeat.
Also, I would have wound up renting a trailer from like Ryan Mallett, and that would have been a terrible idea.
Ryan Mallett, I promise you, would have smuggled drugs into the trailer for you.
Oh, God, yes.
Do you think John Calipari ever looks back and says, maybe that's the path I should have taken? I should have been, like, a nationwide supplier of college trailer housing? You know, he's certainly, I'm not going to suggest that he hasn't been an extremely successful college basketball coach, but consider the opportunity that he gave up.
Yeah, I don't think he regrets that.
Okay. I mean, that idea,
doing. There were a lot of fun details. He also used to like write down motivational quotes and put them on like post-it notes, put them in his dorm room. There were like a lot of, you know, little tidbits that were kind of fun. Cause I mean, I just feel like so many times, and that's why it's a fun story to work on. I feel like so many times, you know, we only really know coaches as coaches or their public persona or this or that, or, you know, and it's kind of fun to talk to all these people that knew them when they were, you know, 18 years old and thought that, you know, I'm going to rent out a trailer.
Yeah.
And it's a great idea. It worked, you know, and you know, it was just kind of, I think it's fun sometimes to, and he's kept in touch with all of these people from his past, which is just incredible. I was like, does he have more than 24 hours in a day? Like, how is he keeping up with these players that he played with 1 year at UNC Wilmington? Like, I was amazed at part of, you know, some of that stuff. But
yeah.
So it was a fun story to work on. But yes, I'm glad that your favorite part was the trailer part.
I mean, come on. The Floridian was definitely going to ask about that. You knew that coming in.
I did. But also the photos, aren't they great?
Yeah. Because you're definitely like, yeah, that's 100% John Calipari. He has not really changed in any drastic way since his youth. So obviously you were not just in Nashville to learn about John Calipari's business juvenile business background, shall we say. it's pretty early in the conference tournament weekend. We're recording this on Thursday night. So we're not really at the point where the major upsets can happen, I guess, unless you want to talk about Penn State beating Iowa or Auburn beating Texas A&M. So I'm not going to put you on the spot to say too much about what the tournament is going to look like. But if you had to give us one team that, as of now, people really like, people think they're destined for a pretty good seed in the tournament, that you think could be out of it maybe before even the Sweet 16, what team would that be to you?
Oh, so we're starting. So we're starting with someone that a lot of people, like other team, other writers and fans and people like that I am less high on.
Yeah, like somebody, like who's somebody that, let's say, an idiot like me might say, "Oh, I could see them. I could see them making a Final Four run." And you're like, "Yeah, I would not be surprised if you are crossing that off much earlier than you expect to."
Okay, well, so I think, you know, I've been thinking about that. I think there's two different ways. I think there's two conferences that are kind of fit that mold. I think everyone's been so high on the Big 12 all year, and it's been really competitive, but I kind of compare it to the SEC West, where, like, I think that the teams are all really close to each other, and I think they're all good, but I don't know if there's a great team there. And so I could see, like, no Big 12 teams get through the first weekend. I could also see, like, you know, two in the Elite Eight. So I'm a little less high on the Big 12 in general, because I just don't think that there's a great team or that the top of that league is great. And then I'll also give you, for a specific team, I'll say Wisconsin. I think, you know, they have a really great offense, very efficient. I just think the Big Ten's been so up and down this year. I think they were better last year when they reached the Final Four. I don't see them getting back to the Final Four, despite the fact that, like, you know, Frank Kaminsky's going to be Player of the Year, and he already has a bunch of Player of the Year awards. And they have a really efficient offense. Bo Ryan's a great coach. I just think that they're going to have trouble repeating what they did last year.
I think having watched a lot of Big Ten basketball this year, one, I am a terrible, terrible decision maker. And two, I think I would probably agree with that. I'm probably a little higher on Wisconsin than you are, just based on just their defensive prowess and just, like, you know, even in their bad performances, like their loss to Maryland, I think that there's some potential there. But I just think overall the Big Ten, like, you know, even the teams that are going to make the tourney from the Big Ten, like, it's not as strong a group as it has been the last couple of years.
Right. And so to me, like, I think, you know, Wisconsin only really lost, like, one piece from last year's team, but he was an important one, and it's really hard to repeat, you know, like, it's almost easier to do it the first time when it's just kind of a blur and, you know, everything's clicking. And, you know, I would be surprised if they get back, especially if they're going to be, which they might be, the number two seed in Kentucky's part of the bracket. Obviously, that would be pretty difficult.
So flipping this question on its head, then, let's talk about a team that maybe, you know, writers, fans, whoever are going to look at and not necessarily feel a wellspring of confidence inside of them, that you think could surprise us and make a deeper tournament run, maybe that sort of, you know, 8 to 10 seed that makes a Final Four run out of nowhere. If you had to pick that now, one of those teams, who would that potentially be?
All right, well, you did not give me this restriction of an 8 to 10 seed earlier.
You know, so you can do whatever you want with this question. I don't deserve any.
I think people are going to, like, pick to be upset. Like, I think that Notre Dame is really good, and I, like, really have enjoyed watching them this season. Jerin Grant is, like, a blast, and their offense is really good, which is a rarity in college basketball these days. So, like, I think they're going to be, like, a 3 or 4 seed or whatever they're going to get. But I think people are going to say, oh, well, Mike Bray's teams haven't, you know, gone very far in the tournament, or, you know, experience levels, blah, 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 blah. But that's a team, like, that could be, like, a dark horse Final Four, depending on, like, how the bracket comes out. I think that another team that you're going to hear a lot about, so it might be a popular trendy pick, would be Northern Iowa. Because in both of these cases, with Notre Dame too, like what you want when you're picking upsets in the tournament are veteran teams with, like, one star who can kind of take over. And Northern Iowa has that, and Seth Tuttle, who actually is getting a lot. He got a lot more attention the second half of the year, because I think people realized, you know, how good they were and how much that team was pushing Wichita State, which obviously is a really respected program as well. So I think, like, that they're going to be, I'm not sure what seed range they're in, but I think that they're going to be a team that people are going to look at to go far. I think Notre Dame and, like, a Gonzaga, people don't trust yet, and those are going to be high-seeded teams that I do trust and I do have faith in. So that doesn't really answer your question. It's hard before the bracket, and, like, you know, an 8 to 10 seed range. Those are teams that have some serious flaws or some serious inconsistencies a lot of time. So So they're tough. I went over to Belmont today. So Belmont, if Belmont gets like a 14 or even a 15, I mean, that's a team you could pick for a really big upset in the opening round.
I mean, look, I ask this question as somebody who is himself very flawed and troubled, like a 10 or 11 seed. So I'm looking for someone like me.
Like the 11 seed of this podcast.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm probably in a play-in game if we're being honest. all right, so let's take the bigger picture. Take yourself back to the beginning of the college basketball season. Comparing where we are now to where we were then, what do you think has been, just in your totally subjective opinion, the most pleasant surprise of the season?
Well, if you couldn't tell earlier in my rave review, Notre Dame's been a really good story, and I think Jaren Grant, he was suspended, had to leave the program, had academic issues last year, so he decided to come back to school, and he's had, you know, All-American type season, so I think he's a great redemption story, which I'm not sure people necessarily thought he'd have the season he would. And then I also think Butler's a fantastic story. I mean, it's Butler, so they have to be, right? But they were dealing with their head coach, Brandon Miller, had health issues and took a leave of absence literally like right before practices began. And Chris Holtman stepped in as the interim head coach, and they just played so hard for him and played so well. You know, he got the permanent job, and that's a resilient team. And they've gone through now three different coaches in the last 3 years and different leagues, and they're still Butler, and they're still lovable, and they still have, like, we all know I love Bulldog mascots, so they have their awesome Blue Three. So I mean, I just think that they're a team that, you know, people thought were still going to be adapting and struggling in the Big East like they did last year, and would have every right to and every expectation to when you're going through a coaching change like that with a health issue, and, you know, players are worried about them, and you know, they've just had a great season in a really, you know, the Big East had a great season as a conference. So it was a tough league, played well. Chris Holtman's, you know, a really good guy. So they've been a joy, too.
First, I'll say that I also am a big fan of Bulldog mascots.
Excellent.
Especially since Butler's mascot occasionally skateboards. And because the blog entry last year when the Butler mascot died is the saddest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Okay, that was a really sad news story that I had to write. Like,
that's
had to grit. It was one of the sadder stories I've had to do.
Taking Ryan's question and flipping it, if you look back to the beginning of the season, who do you think has been the biggest disappointment of this college basketball season?
Well, I would say, like, theoretically, like on a big picture scale, like offense has been a disappointment, like just the fact that it's been very non-existent this season. There's been a lot said and written about the unwatchability of the game, and not necessarily to say that defenses weren't good and aren't good. I mean, obviously Kentucky and Virginia are like historically good defenses, but I just think a lot of other teams are getting credit for playing good defense when it's just the other guys can't make shots and the skill level isn't there and the coaches aren't calling creative things. So that's been a frustrating part of the game. It's just been way too many games like in the teens at the half. But if you want like a specific answer to that, I would say also Nebraska. I loved the Nebraska ball phase and craze last year. Tim Miles is one of the most fun coaches to cover. And I really thought, and we were just talking about how the Big Ten has been kind of not as strong as it's been and also all over the place. I mean, that should have been Nebraska returned to everybody. He was coming off a huge kind of breakthrough season. And like I said earlier, it's so hard to
brought back Pettaway. Like they, you know, yeah. Tim Miles, like he's the nicest guy in the league. So
he's also the goofiest, but yeah, like Pettaway should have had kind of a huge season. He should have been, you know, first team all Big Ten, and he should have been taking over games. And so they were disappointed because they were so much fun last year. So it would have been great to see him do it again.
Right.
All right, so we're gonna ask you a couple of more offbeat, less really basketball related questions here to wrap things up. So let's say you are in charge of a basketball team. You have the ball on your last possession. We'll say it's tied. You're gonna get one shot, and you have to give the ball to a current college basketball coach who's over 50 years old. And I want to clarify that I only picked 50 so that I could sort of arbitrarily take away the younger-ish coaches who have played, you know, in not that long ago in memory, like, you know, Bobby Hurley at Buffalo or Rex Walters at San Francisco. So I really want you to have to pick somebody who we can't immediately say, oh yeah, I can picture that guy taking the last second shot. Who is that coach for you?
All right. Does it have to be Division One?
I mean, if you really want to dig deep, I will let you go wherever you want with this.
Thank you. Okay. So a story I did earlier this year was on Herb McGee at Philadelphia University. He's a shot doctor. He's in his 70s. And he can literally, he runs camps and he stands, at the free throw line or beyond it. And he can hit, 100 shots in a row. He's got, the purest shot. So I would totally take him. And he definitely fits all of your requirements if you're letting me pick.
Man,
outside of Division One.
That's such a good – all right. But did he strike you as somebody who can make a shot with a defender putting a hand in his face?
Yes.
Damn, that's such a good, my answer is garbage compared to that.
What is your answer?
Okay, so my answer was Tad Boyle, the coach at Colorado. Played for Kansas on that Danny Manning team. Did not really shoot the ball a lot. He only averaged 4 points a game. But in my twisted mind, that means that there is this unused shooting greatness in him. And he would really appreciate me putting my faith in him and giving him the chance to take the last shot. But that says a lot about why I am not a coach of any sport at any level, probably.
Right, the odds would eventually have to even out.
You'd think so, yeah. But I'm probably leaning too much on what a movie would tell me at this point. So, I don't know. Jane, do you have a coach that you would pick for this unnecessary hypothetical?
I'd probably go with Stanford's Johnny Dawkins. Mostly
answer.
Yeah, he's got, NCAA and NBA experience, and just the idea of Gus Johnson yelling Johnny Dawkins.
That's true.
Makes me really happy.
That's true. Another good possibility for this: Reggie Theus, the coach at Cal State Northridge. Cal State Northridge is not good, but Reggie had a perfectly fine NBA career as a shooting guard. So, and he's 57. He does not look. I will say the fun part about putting this hypothetical together was figuring out which coaches you're like, oh man, he's over 50, and how much you're like, oh man, he's under 50. There's a lot of coaches that they don't age in the way you necessarily expect.
No, they don't.
Jane, I would just like to point out that your answer was basically as close to Michigan as you could get. His son plays for Michigan.
I did not think about that at all. Of course not. Why would I think about that, Nicole?
Jane, why don't we end with our big hypothetical, or it's more of a ranking, I guess. You and I had a heated debate about it, so if you want to set it up, we'll go ahead and get this argument out of the way.
We were discussing, so as you know, obviously, that different college basketball games have different halftime arena entertainment acts. And these specific acts tend to be fairly similar. There's Quick Change. There was Red Panda, who I will miss for the rest of my life. But we wanted to know kind of what were your top halftime arena entertainment acts for basketball games?
What was the debate?
So the debate was that I wanted to rank them, and Jane said, well, Red Panda's obviously the best. And basically, my point was Red Panda's not on this list because Red Panda isn't an active, it's over. We have to move on.
And no, no, we don't.
And no, no. Nope. So, I side with Jane on this. That was dumb, Ryan. I'm not
trying. It's more like I want to retire Red Panda's jersey. I'm not saying we should forget about Red Panda. I'm just saying, for purposes of if I were to go to a college basketball game tomorrow and I could pick the halftime show from the available options.
Okay.
So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that everybody picks Red Panda number one with a bullet.
Right.
What are you picking after that? Red Panda's unavailable.
So have you guys ever seen the kids who do the jump rope stuff?
Yes.
I don't know what it's called. They do all sorts of different things. They're incredible. I would have to pick them as my active number one seed.
Wow. I thought for sure you'd go with indoor frisbee dog.
Have you seen the jump rope kids?
The jump rope kids.
I saw them at the center, Ryan. That's Brooklyn. You should have seen them.
No, the jump rope kids are cool. I would prefer jump rope dogs though. And to be clear, I don't mean humans holding jump ropes while dogs jump through them. I mean the entire act is like the dog has the jump. Some dogs have the jump ropes in their mouth and they've learned how to spin them. They've learned double dutch. All
that
dogs
would be,
and jump ropes.
That would be the most impressive athletic thing I would ever see. That would be it.
Athletic is not necessarily.
I'm
not
sure it's epic.
I would say it would be. That's a sport. That's a sport.
It would definitely replace something in the Olympics, I think. I think you're right about that.
Definitely.
Oh, man. That's a whole. The mere fact that we don't have an international dog Olympics, entirely separate argument, and one that I think the Olympic Committee should get on tomorrow, if not sooner.
I can send you the email for the USOC.
Thank
you.
You
need it.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Nicole Auerbach, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your stay in Nashville. Good luck gaining 2 pounds a day. I believe in you. We all do.
Mm-hmm.
We will be sure to talk to you very soon in the near future.
Thanks so much, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, NCAA tournament time means one shining moment time. And we're not going to get into a thing about one shining moment as a song that's been done. I think it's also worth noting that you and I and this podcast, I don't think we're going to be able to do anything about it.
That's true.
But I think it is a good opportunity to talk about our own non-shining moments as athletes?
Yes.
So I'll go first. I'm pretty much a non-shining athlete at everything. Easily the least athletic person in my family. Totally fine with that, by the way. I've reached the age where being inherently athletic would not make my life much better. But I think the least athletic thing I've ever done would have to have been in middle school when I played on the middle school basketball team, played sparingly, was definitely coming off the bench. My main goal was to just not do anything at all, try to do as little as possible because that's how you screw up.
Right, right. Yeah.
But contrary to those wishes, somebody passed me a ball. I got a little frenzied because I think we were facing a half-court press, and I promptly dribbled the wrong direction towards the wrong basket. But I will say this, in my own defense, I did not shoot the basketball. I at least heard the screams of agony coming from the bench telling me that I was going the wrong way.
See, that's good. That's good.
So that was a plus.
Yeah.
What is if you had to pick a moment of sports, personal athletic shame, what would you go
So, with? First I'll note that I don't know if this is the same way for you or for other people who are listening to this, but I remember moments from like second and third grade better than I remember anything that happened last month. Infinitely better.
Yeah, because your brain was new and still good. It was,
yes,
you know, like a shiny new appliance that had
it's, right,
been worn down over time.
Right, right. Now I'm addled and old.
Yeah.
So when I was in third grade, there was a kid named Ryan Anders who thought he was super cool because he'd had a small defect in his heart and he had this really, like, he had surgery. And so he had this really big scar that he would show off at the drop of a hat.
Okay.
And he was just super annoying about it and basically made it seem as if because he'd had heart surgery, he was cooler than everybody else in our class. And this was third grade where this all mattered a lot. So I was playing tag with Ryan Anders, and I was, like, running away from him, and I was just like, you know, like, there's no way you can catch me. I've totally got this. And I turned around, I believe, to taunt him. And this is why taunting is bad. As I was turning, I ran direct, because I was turned around, I ran directly into the corner of a brick wall.
Oh, no.
Like, literally head first. And it's one of those things that, like, if Vine had been around,
yeah,
that Vine would have been viewed a billion times.
Oh, yeah,
I
you'd
be
a Vine star. You'd probably be on Ellen or something.
Oh, my God. I would probably have to become, like, a shaman in, like, some like backwards country somewhere to get away from it. Like,
you would embrace it. You'd be like, oh yeah, you know, Brickwall Jane got an endorsement deal with New Balance. It's pretty cool.
That's true. I would hope I would embrace it and not be like ruined by it, like Star Wars kid or something. Like, we can only hope. But anyway, so I immediately fall back, clearly. Like, it went exactly the way you're imagining it, of just me running into the wall and then falling down. And then, like, that was the first time I ever had to get stitches. And I remember my dad came and picked me up, and he had to leave work. And it was one of those things where he was, like, very sympathetic, but at the same time, like, I told him what happened. And now thinking back, I'm like, I think he thought it was funny, but he could not in any way indicate that he thought it was funny. Because it is, like, it was pretty funny. Like, it was only, like, a small cut, but it bled a lot because it's on your head.
Right. Oh, yeah. Do you have a scar from where this happened?
A very small scar that's mostly covered up by my hairline. So
you won because this Ryan had his scar that he showed off all the time. And now you got yourself your own. You weren't trying
I was not. And I actually recently found this Ryan on Facebook, and as far as I can tell, he no longer shows off his stupid heart surgery scar. Stupid. No one cares about your heart surgery. No one did in third grade either. But yeah, so that was not great. Like, I was a really overweight kid, so pretty much anything I did with athletics was, like, super awkward, except for handball, which I was really good at in gym class. But yeah, I would say running directly into the corner of a brick wall, that was pretty bad.
Take that, kids with heart defects.
Boo you.